My sister is 5 years older than me, and while growing up, we shared a room together for about 10 years. We were close, at least as close as our ages allowed us to be, one a child, the other a preteen. Funny how at certain times of our lives, 5 years can seem like an ocean, and at other times it seems like a single drop of water. Without air conditioning back then, on hot summer nights when we were supposed to be sleeping, we would draw alphabet letters on each other's backs, spelling out secret messages. The tickling letters cooled us off, and our shared laughter held our bond of sisterhood together strongly. Years later, when she was in college and I was in high school, we went with our other sister camping to the Boundary Waters. Older now, our lives were not so tethered. She had a job, and along with classes, she was gone a lot. I was active in high school and out with my friends. Our lives were crossing paths less often, and outside friendships and experiences were teaching us new ways to be in the world. While hiking and canoeing in the Boundary Waters those 2 weeks, we found ourselves disagreeing about politics, reproductive rights, about gay rights. Yet I still fondly remember when a major thunderstorm thundered overhead, we huddled in our tent, laughing and singing the soundtrack to The Wizard of Oz at the top of our lungs to chase away any fears that we had about the storm. The bond of sisterhood still held, but the threads of commonality were beginning to unravel. Unravel. Feels like our country is unraveling. In less than 5 months, we go to the polls and vote for our next president of the United States of America. And if the last year, and even just this last week, if the antics at the Republican National Convention are any indication, we're in for a wild ride. I can only imagine what the Democratic National Convention will hold. My Facebook is full of folks posting links to articles or videos that show just how wrong the other party is, how dangerous the world will be if their candidate wins. And I'm sure folks from the other side of the fence are looking at similar stories about the other candidate. Our country has become more and more divided. The words liberal and conservative have become derogatory labels that taste sour when spoken by the opposition. And I have to confess that I am just as guilty. I do like to discuss issues with those who have a studied sense of their ideologies, but when I meet someone who's just shouting back the vitriol they hear on their stream of newsmaking, I quietly make a mental note, file their name in the back of my head, and I silently step away. I'm sure you've done that yourself sometimes. Fellowship member Shannon Kenneman jokingly posted on Facebook one day that he was only going to be friends with folks who voted like he did in the school board elections. He then apologized to all the friends he would be unfriending because of their votes. Of course he was kidding, and he did no such thing. But his words certainly captured what many of us feel at times. New York Times writer Nicholas Kristof writes that we progressives believe in diversity and we want women and blacks and Latinos and gays and Muslims at the table just as long as they're not conservatives. Right-wing conservatives want to push back on laws on abortion, civil rights, and universal health care, feeling that liberals only want to allow people to live off of the government. They fear that all of this liberalism is causing our nation to go to hell in a handbasket. As we pick our camps, Trump and Fox News, Clinton and MSN, we also pick the truths that we choose to believe and stand behind. And then as we follow our tribe, we hear just how stupid the other side is over and over again, as many of us have 24-hour news feed pinging on our phones or in the background on our TVs, fueling this divisiveness all day long. And many of you may be like me. You find this division within your families or neighborhoods or workplace. We begin to figure out who is safe to talk to, who gets our way of thinking, to the point where we probably don't even fraternize much with those who think that differently than ourselves. And for me, that becomes a part of the problem. And a shift away from what at one time held a recognition of certain commonalities. Like my sister and I, we came from the same family. We had a lot of the same experiences, and yet we've come to this place of thinking and acting that is so removed from each other that we can't understand how to be in this new place together. Maybe for you, Thanksgiving or Christmas finds us sitting across the turkey from each other. Either we're tiptoeing, like Connie said, around politics with polite banter, or we're blaming the state of our country on each other's personal beliefs. Blood pressures begin to rise, no longer able to hold our tongues. The room erupts into a free-for-all that matches a Dr. Phil show. Woo-hoo! Happy holidays! If you're sitting in this room, you've known that feeling, that space of being with someone who thinks and believes very differently than you. As Unitarian Universalists, we admit readily that we are different than mainstream religions, and we're okay with that. In fact, we're proud of that. We work hard to be respectful to the religious beliefs of others. We readily stand up for social justice for all, and that often puts us at odds with other folks. Our Black Lives Matter banner targets us for criticism and fear from those who feel we just can't see that all lives matter. But instead, we choose to see this as an opportunity for education and compassion, because as a community, we hold that Black Lives Matter, and we hold it to be an important truth that we need to stand up for. Our fourth principle calls us to believe in the inherent worth and dignity of each and every individual. And we're really good about accepting that idea, and this feels right in our bones. We teach it in our religious education classes to our children. It's written on the walls of our lobby. But wait, we mean everyone. Does that apply to Bible-banging, homophobic, immigrant-hating fearmongers? No, we can't go that far. We just can't. It feels like it goes against everything we stand for. And perhaps it does on some levels. But what did Rumi say in the reading? Welcome and entertain them all, even if they are a crowd of sorrows who sweep your house. Still treat each guest honorably. Treating someone with dignity for being human doesn't mean you must agree with and accept their ideas. Let me say that again. Treating someone with dignity for being human doesn't mean you must agree with or accept their ideas. This is the hard work of loving. This is the hard work of believing in justice and dignity for each individual. We belong to a bold and sometimes difficult faith tradition. We are called to believe in the inherent worth and dignity of Bible-banging, homophobic, immigrant-hating fearmongers. And truth be told, we're called to love and embrace them right here in this building. But we don't. And they're not even here. I highly doubt that any of you are Bible-banging, homophobic, immigrant-hating fearmongers. And they say that America is never more divided than on a Sunday morning, and we're certainly doing our part here at the Fellowship. As grown adults, my sister and I continued to grow apart. Soon we seemed to be on the opposite side of almost every issue. I held one side while she championed for the other. We each felt really compelled to somehow convince the other that our way of thinking was right and our own values were better. And and I have to confess, behind each other's backs, we ridiculed each other to our partners and to our other siblings. Get-togethers became increasingly more uncomfortable, and both of us didn't contact each other as much as we used to. As the years went on, the phone calls lessened. Holidays were tolerated. The bond of sisterhood was barely held together by a single thread. Krista Tippett, who is the host of the NPR program On Being, spoke at our denomination's General Assembly as the Ware Lecturer a few weeks ago in Columbus, Ohio. She touched on this very issue. I would encourage you to go online and listen as she really hits the nail on the head about how we might go about finding ways to be with those who find others difficult to embrace. She says that every single time that we're face to face with someone who thinks or believes differently than ourselves, there is one critical thing we can do to address this conflict. We must simply believe that there is good in the other. That's it. We must simply believe that there is good in the other. Because if we do, if we can believe that, it offers us a crack in the middle where we can find commonality. Not easy. Doing this calls for deep intention. And to be honest, she says it's a lot easier to preach to the choir, which explains why most of us find ourselves surrounded with friends and activities that link us to like-minded people. But the choir doesn't need us. Not in today's political climate. Let me repeat that. The choir does not need us. She says that crack in the middle is the place where people absolutely refuse to see the other as evil. And sadly, that's where we are today as a nation. We're seeing the other political party as evil. Step into this place where we choose to see the other as good is essential to changing this divisiveness. The step into that crack is where we need and must choose to live if we're going to make any changes. For in that crack is a holy space. This is where we as Unitarian Universalists must stand if we are truly to hold to that fourth principle of believing in the inherent worth and dignity of all people. To find that crack, that opening where we can see each other fully, she invites us to ask one simple question of the other, and that is this: what hurts? This simple question invites us to search together to uncover what hurts that makes people feel these things that we can't understand. By asking this, we're suddenly no longer required to be right or wrong. It doesn't even require us to agree. If we ask what hurts of each other, it opens up what is truly at stake. It helps us to understand our beliefs and feelings in human terms, not party line terms. Tippett says that right now, especially with the upcoming election, we must create a safe space so that we can speak together honestly and relate to each other with dignity. Asking what hurts allows us to see what is causing our family members or coworkers to side with things that don't make sense to us. It opens us up to see their vulnerability and fears in a much more human way. As years went on, my sister and I worked hard at avoiding each other. We tried to keep things light when we were together. Our siblings didn't quite understand this dance, but it seemed like the two of us rubbed up against each other like two pieces of rough sandpaper. When our father died, we both had to fly to my parents' home together, and met sitting side by side in the plane for 4 hours. Somehow, it was different that day. Our grief had softened our hearts, Our grief reminded us of a love that we had that used to hold us together. On that flight, we found that crack where we were able to see the goodness that was still in each of us. This time, instead of standing on the opposite side of issues, clutching our values and beliefs firmly in our fists, I got to hear what hurt for her. She and her husband were scared about losing rights, safety, and things that they valued. And I found that we shared some similar concerns. We realized that we both wanted the same things. We just had different ways of going about getting them. We stood in that space, that crack, where we were finally on holy ground, seeing each other as humans, not just ideologies. Educator and author Parker Palmer calls us to cultivate an understanding of the value of otherness. We grow the most in our lives, not by preaching to the choir, but by stepping outside of our tribes and realizing that us and them doesn't mean us versus them. Palmer says that this requires us to cultivate a supple heart. A supple heart is one that can bend and receive and give without brittleness. When we refuse to listen, when we demand that others change their way of thinking to our own, that's a brittle heart. By asking what hurts, we allow the other to show us their pain, to show us why they hold these beliefs that are so different than ours. And Krista Tippett says, it is the one thing that allows us to mine truth as best we can. If we only listen to our hurts, we can never truly know the other. Tippett says that the words we use shape how we understand ourselves, how we interpret the world, and how we treat others. Right now, the world needs the most vivid and transformative universe of words that you and I can draw on to give voice to how we are with one another. And I think it begins here. It begins with you and me in this place of worship. It matters what we say to one another. And we are called to reach out in love, to reach out with respect and dignity, even if what the other thinks goes against what we hold to be true. We can't heal this nation. We can't find peace until we listen with a supple heart. Listening is an act of love. And many of us are not listening. We're too busy telling. We are too ready to reject, dismiss, and cut off the other. And if you stop to think about it, isn't that the very thing that drives you nuts about the other side? They do the same, and then we never really listen, and then we never really hear what hurts. I wish I could tell you that my sister and I continued to approach each other with the supple hearts that we had on that day, on that flight to my father's funeral. But to be honest, it continues to be a work in progress. I'm pretty sure that she will vote for a candidate that I cannot support. A candidate that, if elected for president, will make me seriously wonder about who we are as a nation anymore. And guess what? I know that she would say the exact same thing about the candidate that I will support. But I'm determined to keep trying, to keep approaching her with as supple a heart as I can muster. And even if her candidate doesn't win, all of this just does not go away. I think we must still keep asking each other, what hurts? Because the hurt and the fear that elevated her candidate will still be held in the hearts of those supporters. And if her candidate wins, there will be different fears and hurts that will be held by the other side. doesn't matter what side we are actually talking about, because for both sides, those hurts and fears are real, just perhaps different. If we do not start listening and believing with our whole hearts that those on the other side are essentially good people, we will only continue to grow more divided. As Rumi said, this being human is just a guest house. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door, laughing, and invite them in. I know that this is hard work. I know that we feel justified in ridiculing and demeaning those that we feel are taking our country in the wrong direction. Please, please know that I'm not asking you to support or defend anyone who is seeking violence and harm for others. We must simply stand up against that and hold tightly to our belief for justice for all. But the words we choose are important. If we're not careful, we too join the language of hate and divisiveness, the very thing we may despise in the other. Instead, let's pause and then mindfully decide to see the good, to decide to step into that crack of understanding and then ask what hurts. And then listen. Give them your whole heart. Listen. May it be so.